Hey, it's Andrew. Just quickly before we start this episode, I want to tell you about one of my favorite podcasts, the Secure Ventures podcast. The host, Kyle McNulty, interviews cybersecurity founders about what they are building. I enjoy it because Kyle focuses on their technology, what it solves, why they build it, where it fits in the market. Also, listeners can understand the why of these startups. In some ways, it's a great complement to my own podcast where I focus on the go-to-market side, not the technology side. He's had some great guests on recently, for example, the CEO of Reality Defender, when they talked about the ins and outs of deepfake detection. He's had the co-founder and CEO of Ghost Security, and also the co-founder of Radical, Chris Peterson, who was incidentally a founder of Logrhythm, where they talk about the role of AI in the SOC. This is not a paid promotion. I just simply enjoy what Kyle is doing with his interviews and get a lot out of them. Check it out. It's the Secure Ventures podcast. Now on with this episode. This week, we're going to hear from a cybersecurity reseller about how they think about working with their vendors. How do they evaluate new vendors, especially startups? What makes a good program for them? What is good behavior from a vendor? And also, what is bad behavior, with examples of each? Joining me today is Ricky Martinez, the Chief Strategy Officer at Digital Era Group. Ricky has been working in the cybersecurity channel for decades, both on the vendor side and also on the partner side, where he's built up a couple of resellers. Digital Era itself is a regional cybersecurity VAR. It's got about 40 employees, works with 60 or so vendors, and they work with startups and also some of the most established players in our industry. In other words, exactly the type of VAR a startup should be looking to work with. Don't go away. Welcome to the Cybersecurity Startup Revenue Podcast, where we help cybersecurity companies grow revenue faster. I am your host, Andrew Monahan. Our guest today is Ricky Martinez, Chief Strategy Officer at Digital Era Group. Ricky, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Andrew. Thank you for having me. Very excited about today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. This is the third or the fourth interview we release in our series about working with partners at early stage companies. How does the vendor make themselves attractive and build a great program that's relevant for partners? And in this series of conversations we're having, talking to you, Ricky, and Digital Era Group is the first time we've actually talked to a channel partner themselves and get your perspective on this. So we're trying to get the whole topic surrounded from different angles. And I'm looking forward to getting your perspective as someone who has got a long track record of building resellers and building programs within resellers and working with cybersecurity companies, both large and small. So this is a conversation that I think will be really useful for the audience.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm actually an avid listener of your podcast. So I'm very excited to be on here as a fan.
That's awesome. That's good to hear.
As a fan, and also now I get to participate. So this is great.
You know, next time I'm going to have to send you some Sales Bluebird swag for the office there. So maybe that's what I'll do for an avid listener. But let's move on to the business side of this conversation, Ricky. So in previous conversations, we've introduced this company called Cyber Donut, completely made up, hopefully, with a name like that. But Cyber Donut, let's say, has, you know, 5 to 8 sellers, 20-odd customers in place. They've got a round of funding in place from a reasonably well-known VC. And they're now at the point where they're thinking, okay, you know, as we scale up into the end of this year, into 2024, we need to really work out how we work with partners. So they're in that kind of mode of trying to figure this out. So if Cyber Donut were to approach you and the Digital Era Group, what is the process that you go through to evaluate whether this is a company you want to do business with or it's not? Because, you know, there's 3,400 vendors out there. You can't do them all. So, you know, it's important for you guys to make sure you really align yourselves with the right new startups as well as the ones that are more established.
Yeah, I think probably first we'd go on LinkedIn and see our connections. This industry is so small. Just you and I, you worked at McAfee at one point. I did, and we have a ton of connections together. So just to kind of validate that this is someone from the industry, kind of knows, has been there, done that before, because there's a lot of new entrants that might not be in cybersecurity experts that came from a software development company, and they're just trying to position themselves. So that's one of the first things is, who do I know that knows them? And kind of establish that knowledge of, this is an expert, this is someone that's actually going to be relevant in the industry and has the backing to support that.
So you're looking for founder fit at that point, right? You know, Do we even know them already, or do we know someone that knows them? They seem like they're really part of the ecosystem that we're in rather than a fresh entrance. And then you said at the end there, investment, right? So you look, what's important to you there?
Yeah. So who the backers are, I think it's also longevity. So, I mean, am I going to invest in this company and I kind of want to put my name associated with this, that I'm not doing it, not knowing about this company and their trajectory or their history. So you want to make sure that you have that established and there's going to be continuity. Cause a lot of startups, I mean, businesses start and fail every day. So you want to make sure that when we're investing that there is some long-term or even short-term winnings that we will get and have that continuity. Cause that's key for us.
Okay. And in your portfolio of companies you work with, you know, give me the idea of the split between, I don't know, established and bigger ones and how many truly, you know, early stage companies do you end up working with?
So we get contacted by all the vendors all the time. Probably established, we're probably around 60. The thing is the industry is shifting so quickly right now. There's a lot of new entrants that are well established, like the Wiz example, and there's several others that have come, like Abnormal. Now Mike DeCesar is the CEO there. So there might be new entrants, but they have a history or the team that's been in the industry for a very long time. So I think our split is probably around 60% of the established ones, the larger ones, and then probably about 40% that are up and coming, but established. I mean, like Wiz just was founded in 2020. So it's not an old company, but they've established themselves in the market fairly well.
And just for you at Digital Ear Group, I mean, with Cyber Donut being that early, is that too early for you, do you think? Or do you like to just dabble with a couple like that?
So we like to look at the tech and see what problems they're trying to solve. If they're just another one of those that might be competing with a larger vendor and where we don't see that the customers are actually going to go for it. So we kind of want to see that first. So if the tech is relevant, it's something new, it's something innovative, we will absolutely look at it and we will try to position it because we're also the filter for our customers. The customers get pinged by all the vendors as well. And they kind of come to us as a trusted advisor and say, hey, do you think this is a fit? Will this work? So we actually go through the rigorous process of testing this technology, making sure that it will work in our customers' environment. And then we will present it to them. So that's kind of the approach that we take. So we would not discard them just because they're new and small. We would definitely make sure that they are the right fit.
But I think you're right. I mean, you know, I get to talk to a lot of companies through the podcast and through my business. And, you know, everyone's got their unique take on the market and what they're trying to do that's different. And it can be a little bit challenging sometimes trying to figure out, is this truly different or is this just a slightly better way to do what's out there already? And it must be a challenge for you guys just having to go through that, through the screens a little bit, right? To figure out what exactly is going on.
Yeah, because there's a lot of established, and I mean, back in the early 2000s, there was very few cybersecurity companies, and they were fairly large. So the McAfee's, the Symantec's, I guess the Checkpoints, and those that have already a very big presence, and they just kept on acquiring these newer companies like the Cyber Donuts. But now those Cyber Donuts actually get to expand and become their own thing for a long time. So that's relevant. I think the market is ripe for change. So even you look at those traditional security vendors, they aren't as relevant. They're not as exciting. So customers don't even want to necessarily engage with them. They don't feel that they're bringing something new. So they look at a Cyber Donut, they might say, hey, let's take a look at this. I think this could work. So I think that mindset has changed and they're much more receptive to newer vendors. Back in the day, it was all about being established. And it's kind of old thinking of if you're well established, that you have that track record, you have your things put together. But I think now a lot of people are going for innovation and something relevant. There's so much market change and it makes sense to look at the new.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that happen recently. I was chatting to someone at Black Hat. He runs infrastructure for a company in Canada. And, you know, he likes every year buying two or three early stage products because in many ways it shakes up his team. It shakes up how they do things. It challenges them to think about doing things differently and better as opposed to getting stuck in their ways. So he likes that element of doing it. But speaking of kind of disruption like that, I think, you know, if Cyber Donut comes to you, how do you handle the situation where you may already have an existing relationship and revenue stream from a more established vendor, and you're trying to figure out, well, how do we handle that?
Yeah, so that's something that we kind of go by the guidance of our customers. A lot of times, yeah, we do have established presence with a vendor, but that vendor, since they are well established in the market, they also have other partners. So we're not necessarily going to get that renewal, or we're going to get that business. So that impact, we might want to hedge our bets. And if there is a new entrant into the market that does something slightly different and could be beneficial for the customer, we will definitely entertain it. And that's kind of our approach, is we want to make sure that we're not missing the boat, and we are, well, we have existing revenue, but that's not guaranteed. And that's kind of the reality of today's marketplace, is a sales rep might change, and the new sales rep comes in, has a different partner of choice, and they might just throw their business their way. So we kind of want to make sure that we have the relationship with the customer, and also that the tech is right for the customer. So we would kind of have that opportunity of establishing the relationship with the new entrant into the market.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of times now how important it is for you to be aligned to what your customers want, which may or may not be the same as what the vendor thinks that's important, right? I think if I was sitting in your shoes, and tell me if I've got this wrong, is that I'm thinking that long-term relationships with customers is where your value and your success comes from. And you want to have long-term relationships with vendors, but that's a much more rapidly changing space on the vendor side.
Yeah. And actually, it's a shift in the whole approach of the market. Now, since there are so many niche product technology companies, so there's over 4,000 cybersecurity firms. Back in the day, like when we worked at established companies like McAfee, they had a large portfolio. So the relationship was a long-term relationship. I sold them endpoint today. Next year, it's IPS, intrusion prevention system. The following year, I'm selling them a SIM. But now these entrants or these new cybersecurity firms, they only have one product to sell. So once that sale is done, they move on to the next. So that they're not necessarily in the space to establish a long-term relationship with a customer. They want to get their product in and kind of establish their growth. And that's the shift that's been happening. I mean, I worked at several cybersecurity firms before coming to Digital Era Group as a reseller. And that was the norm. The norm was they had an enterprise sales team that focuses on getting the sale. Then they have a customer success manager that takes it for the renewals. So it's a different relationship. So that initial sales rep is really pushing to close the deal, making sure that they maximize their revenue on that deal, not necessarily giving or sharing the pie with a reseller. And once the deal is done, they move on. They don't have any kind of relationship with the customer where we do. So we have to, because we're not only selling them that one product that we sold them at that time, we're the whole portfolio, the whole security stack, we're actually trying to fulfill. So if we get burned on one technology, then we're not going to get the next. And that's not necessarily the case for the sales rep of the cybersecurity firm.
Right. They got their full bag to work with, and you know, their mindset might be, I've got a bunch of partners I can work with, or even I guess sometimes think they can take it direct, which is probably the worst thing they could do, right?
Yeah. And there's a very recent story around that where new up and coming vendor, very well established in the market. We were very aligned with them, sold it to one of our top customers, enterprise account. And then this year is a renewal, and they've actually wanted to expand their footprint. So they had bought X amount of licenses, and now they actually had to double that licensing. And we were the ones that brought them into the account. Sales rep, for some other reason, they actually lost a deal at another customer of ours, and they took this deal direct, which for me is mind blowing in this day and age, burning bridges, because this is a very small market. They will be at a different vendor soon, and that burning bridges is not a good approach. And also taking deals direct, where I think the market in general knows the value of the channel and establish themselves. And a lot of organizations obviously want to control their destiny, so they have direct sales mentality, but they know that the fulfillment and the channel is very important in their ecosystem. So making that distinction and taking deals direct will hurt them in the market and going forward, because other opportunities, other partners are looking at it and they say, well, there's four or five of these similar companies. Am I going to go with the one that could potentially take this direct, or should I align with one that's more channel focused and is investing in the channel?
Yeah, I mean, it must be the most frustrating thing when you've been working on something, you brought a vendor, a deal, you're working together at the last minute, they end up taking it direct. It's like probably number one cardinal sin at a tactical level someone can do.
Absolutely. No, and I was just saying that there's also building within the program. So when you have and it doesn't necessarily the formality of a channel program, is because that's also where a lot of new entrants get caught up, is in this firm, since they are so new, they didn't have a very formalized channel program. And having those nuances of having your rules of engagement, where I will never take an account direct, is kind of part of that. And I think that, and also not having necessarily a solid channel team that can actually protect the partner in these instances and have someone that we can go to and voice our frustrations, is also key.
Yeah, it seems to me it's a very transparent way to understand the dynamics inside the vendor. Because, you know, I've been on the other side of this, being inside the vendor. I've seen these things happen. And the reason they usually happen is for very short-term thinking reasons, right? If I take this direct, I get a little bit, I don't lose the 10 points of margin. Therefore, I might make my number, you know. And usually it's very tactical things like that, as opposed to someone in a senior position making some sort of big call that it's okay to take certain deals direct to the last minute. And, you know, in that kind of internal dynamics about, you know, who's running what and who's really in charge, it often kind of gives away a little bit that maybe the channel team isn't as powerful inside as you hope they would be.
Yeah, and that's been the history, I think, in this industry, is a lot of times, since there is such pressure on the sales rep to bring in the deal, and in these quarterly cadences of at the end of the quarter, the deal needs to come in, you committed it to your forecast, so you'll do anything you can and to ensure that gets done, even if I burn this partner. And that's kind of a not the best approach, and we kind of get dinged on those things every once in a while.
Yeah. And I think what some people don't realize, you know, that rep sitting there, if it's a rep and their manager saying, let's take this direct, is, you know, word spreads, right? You know, this company, whoever they are, word spreads very quickly. Oh, they took 2-3 deals direct at the last minute last quarter. And suddenly in the channel community, everyone seems to understand that and has heard about it and gets very wary of working with them, right? It's almost the number one cardinal sin, as I said.
Yeah, and I think that having good rules of engagement, and we know, because as channel partners, and we know what value we're bringing to the customer, and we know if we have been involved and we haven't been involved. So if it's a deal that the sales rep is working, we actually have an opportunity. We're working now in Peru, where the vendor's built a relationship. They found the account. They obviously need to fulfill it, so they're looking to partner up with us. So we're not necessarily looking to get all the margin and control that opportunity. We kind of let the sales rep at the vendor take care of that and handle it. We will try to do all our part. And I think that having that kind of a teaming agreement or teaming plan where you establish what you're going to do on this deal and what we are going to do, and we kind of have the clarity. And that way, at the end of the day, it's not, oh, I did it all and I can take this direct, or I'm going to give it to a different partner because you're not adding value. So those are the things that we like established from the get-go, so we don't get burned and there are no any conflicts with these opportunities.
Ricky, let's learn a little bit more about you and personally. I've got a list of questions here, 1 to 35. Why don't you give me 3 numbers and I'll read out the questions.
All right, let's start with number 7.
Number 7, what is your favorite fall pastime?
Fall pastime. Well, I love sitting out in the yard, nice weather. Pumpkin spice latte, my favorite drink. So, and actually one of my friends, he's like, why do you go with the pumpkin spice? You're so cliche, but I love pumpkin. So, and I love pumpkin pie. That's my favorite food.
Something about that in the fall, you know, you're right. It is a little kind of cliched, and I know there's memes out there about it, but you know, there's something comforting about that whole thing, right?
Yep. It's a way to look forward to this time of year.
And you're based in Texas, right? So it's warm down there still this time of year. It's a pleasant time of year to be there, actually.
Actually, last week it was in the hundreds, and this week it's been in the 80s. So I think it's a phenomenal transition.
Yeah, finally it breaks a little bit and gives you a break from the relentless heat of the summer, right?
Absolutely.
All right, one more number between 1 and 35.
Go with 30.
30. Dive bar or cocktail bar?
Cocktail bar. Like my cocktails, like my bourbons, my old fashions, Manhattans. So yeah, that's how we roll. I'm actually going to Vegas next week, so I'll probably look forward to getting some of those cocktails.
What's your bourbon of choice?
Basil Hayden.
Okay.
Love that.
Yeah, I think I got Basil Hayden and something else in the bar downstairs. And being in Colorado, the big thing that we're always excited about is the Breckenridge bourbon, which has grown out of nowhere in the last kind of 8 years and done so well and has got a great reputation. So both Basil Hayden and Breck bourbon are on my shelf, I think. And there's also something else. I think Buffalo Trace is up there as well. All right, last number between 1 and 35.
Let's go with 33.
33. That's an interesting one. Which cybersecurity startup do you really admire right now?
Let's see. It's a good one. I've seen the Wiz transition. I was very excited about that. And we actually positioned it with several of our customers. It was just a phenomenal story. I just think the fastest growing software company. They had great technology. We had a great relationship. But yeah, I think Wiz is probably up there. I mean, that's one of the top of mind right now. But in the past, I know Cylance kind of made an impact, but obviously that story's gone through. But they had a great story, great run, great marketing, kind of set the stage for this next generation technology companies around AI. Yeah.
Any of the AI companies that stand out for you right now, or is it just too early to try and pick one?
On the AI cyber, I think it's too early. I think just AI has just been thrown out as just everybody has it. But everybody actually leveraging it, that's the question right there.
Yeah. No, a lot of promise, and I see people starting to release features. And then you got the companies, the one that sticks out in my mind is Hidden Lair, who, you know, are thinking about securing AI. So, you know, all different angles to the whole AI thing right now. Yeah, so in a previous conversation, we talked about the idea of deal registration. You've introduced a new idea, teaming agreement, teaming plan, let's call it, rather than agreement, teaming plan. Give us a bit more detail about what teaming plan is, what's designed to do, and how CyberDonut might use it.
Yeah, so deal registration is typically just if you found the opportunity and you kind of have protection or additional margin as opposed to any other partner that would come in. Teaming plan is more if there is already an established relationship, because a lot of the vendors, and we know this from the industry, the vendors do their marketing, customers go to the conferences, the same ones we go to, they go to RSA and Black Hat. So they're aware of the customer or the vendor, and they might do some inquiries on the website, and that's the first route, and they'll put their download data sheet, they'll put their email address. So the vendor already know about this customer. And so when you go to deal regist, they say, well, it's already in our database. I'm not going to give it to you. The teaming plan would allow for that partner to establish their role within this business. So this opportunity is already known by the vendor. They can say, well, I'm not giving you the full deal regist percentage, but if you ensure that we do the POC, you sign the NDA, and you take us through the process of getting this deal closed, then I can protect you with X part of the margin. And I'm responsible for X part of this deal. So if the sales engineer on the vendor side is going to do the POC, or if it's our sales engineer. So that's kind of the establishing of I'll do the POC with my sales engineer that's trained and ready to do this. And that way I can earn extra margin for the different activities that I do within this opportunity.
Yeah, what I love about those is it removes all misunderstandings and gray areas about who's doing what and for what reason, right? But the way I've seen it before is almost line by line, right? If a partner leads the POC, you get, I don't know, I'm making numbers up, eight points. If you also run the contract and put it on your paper, there's another 3 points. If you know, all these sorts of things kind of come into play. So you know exactly how you're going to maximize your money on that one deal. And it's something that at the start, right, when you're trying to build relationships with people, you know, these sorts of agreements keep you friends and avoid you falling apart and become enemies. But maybe after doing business for 5 years with a rep or a team, you know, these things come a little bit looser because you just know how you work together, right?
Yeah. And it also lets the management know, because at the time, and let's say we need to scale this, or another partner comes in and says, oh, I have the best relationship with this customer, you should give the deal to me. Well, if there's an existing teaming plan, we can see, and the executives can see, oh, no, we've already engaged with Digital Era. They did the POC. They did this. So they get protected. I'm not just going to hand it over to you because you took the CISO out for drinks last night. And he talked about that opportunity. So that's kind of what the team plan also allows, and get clarity and visibility from the executives, because the rep already knows. But we want to make sure that the rest of the organization knows as well.
Now we're getting into the area about how do we do business together. And, you know, when I think about that, I think about a proper channel program that the CyberDonut team should be thinking about. You know, given their early stage though, and they don't want to try and boil the ocean on this, what would you look to say, yes, these are the good components of a solid channel program from an early stage company?
Yeah, I think protection is ideal. Having a very solid deal reg. Now, not make it overly complex. A lot of times you come from a maybe more established vendor that has very detailed and complex terms for deal reg and for all these and incumbency advantage, things like that. So the case that I talked about earlier, that would have been incumbency because we brought the deal originally, we closed the deal. So this is the renewal and upgrade. There should be some kind of incumbency in there. So things that would protect us going forward. Because that's one of the things. I'm bringing you to one of my accounts and establishing the presence that now it's up to renewal. Now it's not the sales rep, it's the customer success manager. And they have to kind of know where Digital Era stands with this relationship. So give me a quote, not just give it to one of the large national accounts and have them quote it, which happens a lot.
So incumbency protection and protection in general is good. What else would you want to see as part of the program?
I think margin, establishing just fairly clear margin, because I know everything gets discounted. MSRP is just a number. No vendor really goes by the SRP numbers. So we want to make sure that there's flexibility, I think, in pricing. And then there's established guarantee of margin. There's a lot of times when you introduce large national accounts that they're in the business, they're a bank. So they're winning deals at 1%, 2%. For a smaller bar like ourselves, that won't fly. Like sometimes a customer spends 90 days to pay us and we're only making 2 points, and it's not a viable business for us. And that's kind of what we want to establish, is we have enough margin that makes it relevant for us. And then we're also not going to be undercut by a national account.
Yeah, I feel like that's one area that, like in this case, Cyber Donut should think through, right? Because I think the temptation is, well, we could go to and, you know, pick the company. It could be a cybersecurity reseller, a big one like Optiv, or it could be a bigger kind of license play like CDW, something like that. And they think they got a lot of coverage there, right? There's, you know, we'll get access to their team of whatever it is, 500 salespeople, and look at the coverage we're going to get. In reality, you won't get that coverage, right? You'll get a very, very few number of those will even pay attention to you, because it all matters what happens at the rep level, not what the company says to do. And then secondly, you're going to devalue yourself a little bit, because you're suddenly in the game of a bunch of these companies fighting over cost plus 1%, cost plus 2%, and discounting things left, right, and center. Whereas they work with someone like you guys, you're a specialist VAR, right? So you've got value there. And you're used to working in a way of solving problems for customers, not just giving them better margin or better pricing.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's kind of the catch 22. So a lot of vendors, when they come in, they're like, yeah, I can sign a large national account because I have global coverage. But that's not, as you mentioned, it's not necessarily the case. You're not as relevant when you have Ciscos of the world and they're selling billions through these large national accounts. Is it going to be relevant in the local market? And I think that's kind of the value of us. We're established in South Florida. We have a great presence in the Caribbean. So partnering with us, and we kind of know the market, we know the players, the CISOs, we have the relationship. If you go to a national, it's usually a large call center in Chicago or in Austin, and then they're calling everywhere. But you're not relevant to them. So you want to make sure. And also when you go through training, you might go and spend a lot of money to train up the sales team, but they're going to go in, they're going to have your breakfast, drink your drinks. But then at the end of the day, they're just going to push what's the easiest for them. And that's usually the bigger brands that have an established market.
Yeah, their behavior is the path of least resistance to make as much money as possible, right? And what's top of mind for them, what the program of the day is, they do get influenced a lot by things like that. But let's go back to the discussion about margin or discount. So two different topics there, margin and discount. What do you prefer to see in terms of a structure that someone works with you on?
I think the flexibility, that's key for us. A lot of times, especially if you're competing, you're in a competitive environment where if we're competing with a different vendor, they will discount and have that flexibility. And that's kind of what we expect from the partners that we're engaging with. A lot of times you, in your business plan and in your mind, you're, well, this is my price. This is the margin I'm going to make. This is how I'm going to go to market. And I worked for one of those vendors that had a very strong federal business. And in federal, it's a contract. The contract vehicle is established pricing. There's established margin. And that's it. They didn't move from that. So they wanted to go into the commercial side and they didn't want to offer flexibility. They said no discounts. They said no discounts on renewals, which was kind of absurd. Now, if you have your very tight positioning in the market and you're one of the few that does that, you can get away with it. But if you're a new entrant like a Cyber Donut, you want to make sure that first you establish your presence, but you have to have logos. You have to get into accounts. You might sacrifice in one with having that flexibility and discount, but there might be the next customer that doesn't necessarily require it and they are going to go directly with you. So that's one of the key things that we we like from our vendors, and newer vendors typically have that flexibility. But we want to make sure that they're not delusional and like, well, this is my price. I'm not going to budge. And because we might not win the deal if we don't have the flexibility.
Yeah. And some of those early stages, Cyber Donut, they don't have a rev rec team that's going to, you know, control these things, right? So they have the flexibility. I guess it's having the confidence in their partners to say, let's just agree how we're going to have those discussions about, you know, each deal and the pricing and things like that. I mean, I guess the good thing is they're likely not to be, you're not going to be doing 10 deals a month with them right at the gate, right? So they're just going to start with one or two maybe as you get going, and then you build up some trust and see how they work together. And then you'll know where boundaries exist or what they get upset about and what you expect as well. They'll learn from you as well.
Yeah. And I think also we if we are in a long-term relationship and we're trying to position this with multiple customers, having the flexibility and knowing that when we close that first deal together and that it had a great taste in our mouth, then we will do on our behalf, if we need to protect your margin and for you to make your number, if you say my annual goal is $1 million, and that first one we had to discount it heavily, maybe the second one we won't, and we will work with you. So understanding also, and that's one of the first things that we try to establish is, what is your goal? What is your quota? And how am I going to be able to contribute to that? Am I going to be 10% of that, or am I going to be 80% of it? And if I'm 80, let's work very closely together and make sure that we help you to get to your number, and then obviously that we get compensated for helping you with that.
I interviewed Tim Eads, who's one of the general partners at Cyber Mentor Fund. I interviewed him a couple of months back. And one of the things that he said was, you know, early stage for a company like Cyber Donut, the thing to focus on is having delighted customers, right? Because delighted customers, word spreads, they renew, you know, you learn from them, you collaborate, things like that. And it struck me just what you're saying there is that also what you want is delighted partners. You don't want to just have a partner that you do business with. But if I was the leadership at Cyber Donut, I'd be saying, okay, we only need, I don't know, 3 to 5 partners, let's say, for the whole of 2024. Let's make sure that in every interaction we have with them and every deal that we win together, that they are delighted to have done business with us and want to keep doing more. Because that's like a drug internally at the company like yours, right? Word spreads. You know, I got this deal. We closed it in 45 days. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. The product just worked. Customers delighted. You know, that kind of nirvana, you know, it doesn't happen all the time, right? There's you know, things along the way. So every time that happens, you want to have someone like Digital Euro Group just delighted to want to do business with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have those. And that's kind of the track record is that we established that, because also that providing that value and being delighted in the way that we approach these deals, it also helps the customer on their end. They feel that we actually supported them. We provided them value, and then they'll want to repeat business with us. So that's the kind of engagement that we want with our vendors. We don't want to have a vendor that was such a hard deal and have to go through contracts and discounting and back and forth. We want to make sure that our customers are excited about the when we close these opportunities and deals, and that can replicate and we can continue to do this. And then as soon as that happens, we're like, oh, I know these 5 other accounts that we can position this, and if we can repeat this kind of interaction, we will do it. But if the first one was bad, it's very unlikely that we're going to be able to spread that to other accounts.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I tell people, Ricky, you may agree or disagree with this, is that you know, it's important that, you know, the Cyber Donut leadership team, you know, sign up with you as the chief strategy officer at your company, right? And you have a relationship and you set it up. But at the end of the day, what actually matters is the rep to rep conversations and relationship, because, you know, nothing happens unless something happens down at that level. How do you like to see that work together? Like, what would you expect the Cyber Donut sales team to want to do with your sales team?
So, there's the first thing that we do is we have direct engagement, and they kind of go through their accounts, their targets. So Cyber Donut will have a list of accounts that they want to kind of pitch to and penetrate, that have the market fit for them. And if they align with the accounts that we're already managing or that rep handles, that's kind of the alignment, the first thing that we want to do. And then obviously build that personal relationship. And one of our successes, and the reason that we also have the large portfolio of vendors that we represent, is because those relationships have been built rep to rep. So our sales rep has built a great relationship with X rep at a vendor. He goes and moves on to a new vendor. And since that relationship and that camaraderie and the work together was so good, we'll replicate that in the new vendor. And that's been one of the keys to success, is we sold a lot of X technology at X company with this rep. Now he's at a new vendor and up and coming next gen. Well, let's replicate, let's do the same thing. Because it's really the people aspect of this. The technology is great and it's obviously got to be relevant for the customer. But if the relationship is there, you know that, and we get that all the time. Whenever a rep transitions company the first time, they'll reach out to us and say, I worked with Digital Era in the past. They were great to work with and I want to do the same thing in this new business.
And except for the bad behavior around, you know, taking deals direct, what's the kind of big cardinal sin that Cyber Donut could commit that would cause you to back off from not wanting to do business with them again?
I guess dictating terms with the customer. A lot of times, if we understand the budget of the customer, we understand how much we can make with this. Obviously, we won't necessarily want to hurt the vendor, but a lot of times we've actually recently at RSA, we took one of our top customers to meet the chief revenue officer at one of these new security vendors. We have already gone down the path. It was pretty practically a done deal. The chief revenue officer, that customer, that vendor offered him a 25% discount right away. And so basically affected our margin. He's like, no, if we got to close this at the end of this month and I'll give it to you at this price. And the CISO came up to us like, wait a minute, I can get this at 30% lower than what you had already given me. And they were already down in procurement. So having that dictating terms, kind of trying to control the dynamic with the end user, because I mean, that's part of our value is we understand the budget. And also it's helping us. So if we can close the deal and you're making whole on your part and we can get extra margin because we understand this, let's leave it at that. Let's let us dictate the terms and kind of build the relationship because that's what we do is we're putting the pricing in front of the customer. When the vendor tries to do that, it kind of cuts us out and we don't have control. And that's one of the cardinal sins that I see and happens a lot, especially with more established vendors. Then they start having direct conversations, provide pricing, and then we have no control at the end of the day then with that.
Yeah. Let's not do that, right? Let's not discount deals that are pretty much done already. That's not good, right? I think it probably betrays a little bit of a mindset where, you know, we're the king here and you're just the, I don't know what, right? It's part of the cog and you'll do what we say. When in reality, I think honestly, you may see this in the last 20 years, I think it's flipped around where in many cases, it's the partner that's really the one that holds a lot of cards in the relationship because you have the longevity, you got the track record, you got the access that a lot of these other companies are striving for. And they should probably recognize that and treat companies like yours as if you're a much more valuable partner than perhaps they're doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes to rules of engagement. I think the one of the rules of engagement, one of the previous vendors I worked with was we only provide MSRP pricing, no discounted, no other, don't negotiate under the pricing. So if we can establish that in the rules of engagement, then we will be fine.
Yeah, I think we had that at McAfee eventually at one point where it was pretty much, you know, I don't know if it was a fireable offense, but it wasn't far off it. If you as a seller gave pricing to a customer that wasn't MSRP. And I think it changed dynamics quite a lot internally about how people would go about talking about pricing and, you know, all the rest of it. So that's good. Well, listen, I've enjoyed the conversation, Ricky. I hope the audience have learned from your perspective as a reseller out there in the cybersecurity world, you know, building your business and the things that you look for companies such as Cyber Donut. If someone wants to get in touch and talk about a partnership or even talk more about, you know, any advice you can give them about getting their program going, what's the best way to get hold of you?
Through LinkedIn is a great way of communicating. I'm also an avid WhatsApp user. So my phone number, and just reach out through LinkedIn. I'll share my mobile number with you. Also digitalairgroup.com. There's information on how to contact us there.
Great. I'll put the website and your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. Anyone can just look down in their app and see that there and get in touch with Ricky. So Ricky, as always, great to chat and wish you all the best.
Same here. Thank you so much, Andrew.
It would mean a lot to me and to the continued growth of the show if you'd help get the word out. So how do you do that easily? There are two ways. Firstly, just simply send a link to a friend. Send a link to the show, to this episode. You can email it, text it, Slack it, whatever works for you and is easy for you. The second way is to leave a super quick rating. And sometimes that can seem complicated, so I've made it as easy for you as I can. You simply have to go to ratethispodcast.com/cyber. That's ratethispodcast.com/cyber and explains exactly how to do it. Either of these ways will take you less than 30 seconds to do, and it will mean the world to me. So thank you.